Hey there, it's Dane Reinhardt bringing you the President's Perspective, a conversation between current and future leaders of NAHU.
So we're fortunate today to be joined by Ashley Kapostens, who I think I've known 10 plus years. Ashley is from Florida, pulls for some irrelevant team in the SEC, has a 16-year-old, a 6-year-old is doing about 6 months, 5-year-old is doing about 5 months for the third one, and has been involved in really all levels of NAHU, but like all of us, has a real job outside of being, you know, about to become membership council chair, thank God.
That's why she got pregnant. Also, she gets to take time away from being membership chair while she's on maternity.
And meanwhile, she's also serving as the president of the Florida chapter. So it's kind of a light duty year for you. So
yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Nothing else is going on. I clearly couldn't find another hobby. I don't know.
And in her part-time work is an active commentator during board meetings.
All for the greater good.
That's right. All right, Ash, thank you for joining us. We're going to kind of get serious because we don't actually, neither of us know what you do other than you work for Cigna. I think you're CIA, and David thinks you could be maybe like the heir in line to being the CEO of Cigna, but we don't actually know what you do. And so we usually kick things off with sort of, how'd you get stuck in this crazy business?
Yeah. So how did I get in this crazy business? So coming out of college, while I was in college, I was managing a restaurant and the same time bartending there, and realized, you know, obviously went through this whole college experience not to necessarily do that. So looking for my sort of what's next. And there were some family friends that were in this business. They were actually hiring. They were trying to put together an agency focused on small group and individual plans. And so I kind of just, you know, the right place, the right time, knowing the right people, and sort of fell into that whole thing, which was funny because I showed up there and then somebody that I consider a mentor to me, her name is Lori Anderson. She was very active in the local Central Florida health underwriters. And so I saw her trying to put all of these things together one day and just sort of offered a little bit of help. And so I'm pretty sure I came in as a membership chair or membership co-chair before I was even actually a member of the association, you know, just trying to like help out and learn everything I could. I was trying to, you know, immerse myself in everything that was the industry. That the only thing that was going to do is, you know, hopefully make my job easier or me better at my job. And so at the same time I was learning about the industry, I was also starting with the association.
And then you, at some point in time, stopped on the retail side and went to the wholesale side, but you were somewhere else before Cigna, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually worked at a few agencies on the agent side. I'd say I was kind of in niche spaces, if you will. And then, you know, interestingly enough, I've never looked actively for a job. Say that that's totally in part to the association and my involvement, that I kind of got poached everywhere that I was. So I did make a switch to the carrier side and worked for a Florida-based like HMO in their small group area for a while. And then about 9 years ago, got approached by Cigna to go on that side. And I've been with Cigna ever since in some form supporting the broker community and then attached to the individual side of the business.
Yeah, this is where it gets fuzzy.
Yeah, so I mean,
what do you do? Like, okay, when you say individual, is that inclusive of both the under 65 and the Medicare space? And what, like, do you oversee both markets? And are you working on exchange stuff? Like, I know it's a lot of questions, but like, I don't really truly understand. It seems like you're involved in a lot in your role.
Yeah, absolutely. So my role, generally speaking, is I am the national sales manager and strategic lead for brokers as it relates to the under 65, like ACA medical, and our any age dental. So on one side, I kind of manage the sales teams that support brokers in all of our communities. You know, obviously our products the footprint's a little bit different. So on the dental side, it's 50 states. And then on the medical side, we're currently in 10 states. And so I manage the sales teams that support the brokers on that side. And then on the flip side of that, I do sort of manage the strategy and make sure that we're thinking through things the right way and that our plans, both for current state and then future years, are in place and make sure that, you know, we can execute on our goals.
So if we marry the two things with NHU, let's call that, generally speaking, I know it's way more than that in your involvement, but just the government relations side being NHU in your career, do you have some sort of reading of the tea leaves of how you feel about the market you represent? Like, are you doing a lot of work in the ICRA space? Where do you see opportunity and sort of concerns in your market space from a regulatory perspective, especially with this new administration coming in play? Is there anything you guys are bouncing off the wall that you're worried about or excited about?
You know, I mean, I think just generally speaking, you know, over the course of the last 10 or so years, right? No day is the same as the one before. And I think, you know, current administration is no different. I belong to the mentality that with change comes opportunity. And I feel that way, you know, professionally and then in my personal life, as much as it's uncomfortable to kind of get out of comfort zones. I think, you know, that's truly where you see sort of the success metrics flip. And I feel the same way right now. I mean, obviously there's the extended open enrollment that it feels like it's never going to end, which is a great thing for the consumers in the world. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, but at the same time, we had to shift a ton of focus to make sure that we were equipped to take all of this on and be ready to support all of this market. So I see a lot of opportunity more so than I see sort of things that keep me up at night. Obviously, there's a ton of things, you know, in the list of potentials. I mean, ICRA is something that we're definitely having a lot of conversations on, but more just digesting what it means and what it means as a carrier to be able to appropriately support that for the broker community.
Yeah, that's a deep dungeon of problems.
Yep, that's where learning.
I don't know. I just go back to this piece where, like I said, I feel like I've known you forever. And yet at your relatively young age, you're running the broker side and the under 65 strategy for a huge company like Cigna, which I do think it's fascinating to hear how both sides of the world, of our world, really kind of give you insight. I don't think a lot of us think about Cigna being a broker-friendly company when it comes to some things, but I think I know from my interaction with y'all on benefits side that it's very clear that that understanding and that commitment's there. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I came into the industry as a broker, and it's certainly a soft spot in my heart for all, you know, even now that I don't necessarily do the day-to-day sales piece of it anymore. But there's something just so important about the work that they do, the work that the association does. And honestly, the recommitment to the broker community on the channel that I own was kind of a no-brainer. And I'm so excited just to see the commitment levels just continue to increase. And I always love it when the light bulb goes off for everybody to understand how the partnership works. It benefits everybody, honestly, when we're all kind of working together. So I really love that aspect of my job every day.
Yeah, I was reading an article, I think earlier this week, that said some sizable percentage of the newly enrolled people in the marketplace nationally are in Florida. Yeah. I mean, like some 25%, some large percentage out of just one state was pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice timing on us, you know, doing some expansion there too, so we could kind of be a part of that party. We have some pretty, I'd say pretty aggressive growth goals over the next couple of years. So it's nice to just see all of this kind of play out, and I'm rather enjoying this year as it comes to opportunity and what we're seeing from an interaction perspective.
One of the interesting parts about where you are, and I've had this feeling for a while that once things stabilize in the marketplace, that it would be just as competitive as the Med Advantage market has. And yeah. I really feel like we're starting to see that level of competition. We went from a risk market to, you know, almost like it started in this place of, well, we're going to try it out because we kind of feel like we have to. And then people ran away as they felt like the risk had gotten strange. And now they're coming back and seeing it as an opportunity market. And I just think we're going to grow upon that. I'm wondering how that fits into what y'all are seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of, my analogy on when everything started was that the carriers were sort of forced to play darts blindfolded in the dark. And so there's a whole lot of guessing games that had to happen. And unfortunately, a lot of us guessed wrong. There's a ton of learnings and assumptions that we made and just didn't necessarily get it right. So definitely seeing it from the competitive space, there's a ton of, I think, momentum happening in this space, generally speaking. There's a lot of new carriers coming in. You see expansion plans all over. The commissions are getting really aggressive. And so there is a lot of competition happening, and it just makes it all kind of the more fun, actually, especially working for a carrier like Cigna, where there's that customer first mentality. Like, it puts us in a really great, strong spot. So it's pretty fun to watch, but I definitely think that your assumptions are playing out, and we're seeing it all over the place. It's not even just, you know, the markets that you would assume would be really aggressive and competitive. It's kind of across the board, which is a really great thing to see.
So I know, Ash, you were doing a lot of traveling pre-COVID, and it was a drain on you a lot. Like, it was really a struggle to be a wife and a mom and career person. You know, we've all had our COVID struggles, whatever they've been, just the adjustment of being at home, and without rehashing that. And I think at one point your mother moved in. So there was all, you know, just changes in family dynamics and things like that. But do you see yourself returning to the airports soon, or are you going to sort of continue to do the work the way you are remotely? Like, have you just reconfigured your job because of COVID that way? Or how does that look for you?
Yeah, you know, I think there's going to be a little bit of a combination of both, right? So the airport warrior was definitely, I think, a really really great describing word. David, I know that you're in the same boat with that too. And so, you know, obviously over the past year or so, everything really slowed down. And from that particular piece of it, I'm one sort of sitting in the background saying, it's okay that things don't necessarily all go back to normal right away. I'm sort of enjoying being home and the family time and getting to eat dinner with my kiddos and all of that fun stuff every day. So I'm kind of enjoying that, but I do think it did force all of us to learn alternative ways to get things done. And so do I think I'll be traveling as much as I was before? Probably not, but definitely feel like I've learned a lot from a tech perspective that, you know, it's okay that things don't necessarily have to happen face to face. And so, you know, just capitalizing on that where I can, but there'll be a combination. But I definitely don't think it will be quite as aggressive as it was before.
I think one of the, in kind of tying this back to what we do, one of the best parts of my quote unquote NHU career has been serving on committees and getting to do things that are totally reactionary and totally explosive in terms of changing things. And then handing it over to someone that I know is better at keeping things together and making things work. And we did that the first time on professional development. And I feel very good about where PD is as a benefit within the association. And I'm excited about you becoming membership council chair. I mean, I think tomorrow would work for me, but I'm intrigued to hear kind of what you think and where you think membership as a council, but also kind of as what it does towards a broader mission of what we're trying to do, how that fits. What do you think it's going to be?
I think there's this really interesting element of like a back to basics mentality paired with a like that whole opportunity from change type thing too. So I feel like in the evolution of what we've seen from our industry as a whole, like we haven't necessarily from a membership perspective followed the same sort of progression. And so obviously you made a lot of changes this past year with you and just not being afraid to not do what we've done before, right? Because that gets to be a part of our mentality of what I'm comfortable with, this is what we do. And if we do this, it's going to give us this end goal or this solution. And I think it's really important that we just take a step back and rethink the way that we're approaching things and make sure that we're doing it in a way that's so mindful to what transitions our industry have seen, but then also not overcomplicating everything. I feel like sometimes we go down this rabbit hole of making everything so complicated, and sometimes we just don't need to do that. So that's where I say sort of this back to basics paired with making sure that we're changing our identity to kind of pair with what we've seen from the industry.
I would not be a very good membership chair, but I do have a vision for membership, and I not in 1 year, but sort of over time, I found that COVID allowed us all to get uncomfortable, and those that embrace being uncomfortable found the opportunities you were talking about before, just that, you know, growth comes from uncomfortableness that's caused by change or embraced through change. So I see all of that as a catalyst for the opportunity that membership can become. What will be proposed at the House of Delegates, you know, on the membership side, and what's going on in some of these test pilot programs with some of our partners. You know, membership is really going to become, to me, more of a revenue than body count. I'm not saying we're going to get rid of our individual membership. So those listening on the podcast, all six of you, that's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that membership, in the way that it's being done in the agency membership model, is really more of a slot. You know, if you have X number of slots, then you just slide person one in when person two leaves, kind of thing. And so I do think the membership will become revenue driven. I think that the whole NAHU should be sort of revenue tracking. And I think where I'm going with this, what will be a question, is I think there's an opportunity to embrace our other external stakeholders in the form of SHRM, whatever they are, NAFA partners, and sell them the things that you've done before, like PD and other things like that. And then potentially 1 year, maybe there is like a joint dual membership with these other sister organizations, and they need some of the government relation stuff that we do and do well. David and I, last podcast, had a gentleman on who founded the NIA, National African American Insurance Association, Gerald Tillman. And, you know, I think there's opportunity for us to work with them. I just think that all these things can be done, and they can't be done in 1 year. But that was maybe a question, but a lot of thoughts that I just had from a vision side of membership. I think it's unlimited what we could do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole thing of getting away from this is the way we've always done it and continuing on that path. There's so much opportunity out there. There's so many additional partnerships that we could be solidifying just by kind of reaching out a little bit and having the conversation. Does it make sense for everything that we offer to some of those sister organizations? No, probably not, but there's a lot that we bring to the table that they don't, and probably vice versa. So what I see is sort of a, you know, not only an opportunity for membership, but when you start talking about value adds behind that, it opens the doors up to so much more networking opportunity. You get so many additional experts and that kind of access that comes through it. I mean, I think so many of us can credit the association to the progressiveness of their careers and making them experts or being recognized as subject matter experts in their space. So much of that comes from our affiliations here. And I think as we kind of expand our line of thinking into what an ideal member should be, you know, it does nothing but strengthen that. So yeah, to your point, there's a ton of opportunity out there.
So I think the other thing that both love about you, when Dane said earlier that you were in the, he thought you were in the CIA, I think he was referring to the Central Intelligence Agency. And I heard it and thought you were part of the Culinary Institutes of America because of the fact that the one
that most... Maybe I did mean that.
Oh, okay, good. Here I am making assumptions about things that Dane says. That's such a dangerous thing. But one of the great aspects, and I think we've both been the beneficiary of this over the years, is going anywhere in the world and saying, hey, I'm going to be here. Where should I go eat? In fact, I think we got the advantage of that in Iceland one time, right, Dane?
I think we may have. Ashley, did you hook us up in Iceland?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I feel like David rarely goes up places where I don't throw out a couple must-dos.
I think the
We went off track when we had the dinner in D.C. to that place, but you had heard of it, that whatever that was. We had that 6-course dinner or whatever. But yeah, I know you've changed the way you eat. Are you still on that track? And have you found any good cuisine in there that you're digging, and any new food interest during COVID?
Yeah, so COVID is my opportunity to do a lot more research on the foods and sort of what the impact of what I was eating had on my body and all of that fun stuff. So like the food is medicine type mentality, right? So it was more like research, I think, than anything else. And I did make a switch to the vegan diet, which is kind of insane considering how obsessed I am with all kinds of food. However, these days being pregnant, I have found, surprisingly enough, that I have a sort of an anti-food approach a little bit. And I'm finding that I'm rather enjoying eating like a 4-year-old. So it's just a whole bunch
smoothies.
Of, Yeah, right. So smoothies, grilled cheese, you know, the basics, right? So I'm kind of excited to get back to my normal way of food life, if you will. I'm sort of missing it, but the whole thought of figuring out what's for dinner has become a task that's just too daunting most days of late.
Yeah, especially if you're not digging anything to eat in general.
Exactly.
When I had COVID last summer, having no taste or smell, like, it was so defeating eating good food, knowing that there was no pleasure in it.
You didn't even know what it was. Right, right.
I mean, I could have been eating anything, but I remember I had a good couple of good meals thinking, what a waste.
I just appreciate your insight into food and the fact that you're, like, one of my favorite things to do is to go to dinner with you and to not order food. In fact, I think I might have told you the story, Dane, but I went to Sedona back in February with four of our friends from NHU, found a place to go, and Ashley just texted me a list of all the things that we should order and then just share them at the table. It was again, one of those great experiences of Ashley touching our lives without actually having to be there. So thank you for that. Yeah. I'm very lucky to call you my friend for a long time. So, and thank you for what you do for us.
Back at you. Feel that way. Definitely. It's a mutual.
Well, thanks for visiting with us today.
Yeah. So glad you invited me. It's fun.